First, it's our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. President Biden's COVID relief bill is making its way through Congress. The president's picks for cabinet positions are in confirmation hearings with some hurdles and controversy along the way. And the U.S. Senate held its first hearing yesterday looking back at what happened on January 6th and what went wrong during the insurrection at the Capitol. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you follow any of yesterday's hearing about January 6th? What were your impressions? What do you have? What questions do you have still coming out of it? Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson stood out for pushing a different narrative over what happened. Do you have questions about his role and what he's had to say about January 6th? And what kind of investigations do you want to see going forward? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Anita Kumar is a White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico. Anita, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this hearing on January 6th and security problems there. Who did we hear from, first of all, talking to the Senate committee yesterday?
Well, believe it or not, this was really the first hearing, even though this was, you know, more than a month ago. We heard from the D.C. police chief, the former Capitol police chief, who, of course, left after January 6th, and then the sergeant-at-arms, both from the House and the Senate. Both of them have also left.
Anita, I'm going to jump in, Anita. We've got a bad connection coming through. We're going to, I think, call you now, and we'll give that a shot. Just it's kind of breaking up here. Sorry about that. In the meantime, you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you want to join our Week in Washington conversation, what do you want to come out of January 6th when it comes to investigating what happened, what went wrong at a security level? Do you want to see a 9/11 style commission look at this? Do you think that there can be a bipartisan look at the events of January 6th? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Anita, sorry about that. Take it from the top. Who are we hearing from yesterday?
Sure. We heard from four people, the D.C. police chief. We also heard from three officials who have left, the Capitol police chief, and then the sergeant-at-arms of the House and the Senate. All three of those people left after the January 6th riots.
And what kind of accounts did we hear? A lot of the people you just mentioned raised concerns, saying that they hadn't gotten enough intelligence briefings. I've seen some skepticism about that. Was there a fair amount of finger pointing going on here?
Yeah, I mean, they contradicted each other and had different timelines and things that didn't match up. But I would say there were a couple things that really stood out from all four of them. One of the things is that they had called the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, and asked for the National Guard to come out. And they say that there was quite a delay, that there was a 2-hour delay even to send them, send guardsmen and women over there because of the optics. They're saying the Department of Defense said that it wouldn't look good to have these military officials at the Capitol. That prompted a lot of questions, as you can imagine, and now senators want to hear from the Pentagon about that. And then the other thing is what you alluded to, is that the intelligence, what happened to the intelligence? Why did they not realize that this could happen on that day? And what we heard was really alarming to some senators, which is basically there was some information out there that the FBI had collected that something could happen to the Capitol on January 6th. But it never got to the right people. So it went to, it was from a office in Virginia, and then it came through the FBI to the District of Columbia, but it never got to the Capitol Police Chief, is what he's saying. And so they just didn't get that information into the right hands, and they did not realize the Capitol could be breached.
We are talking about some of the top stories in national politics, including the hearings yesterday and going on about the January 6th events. Anita Kumar is with us from Politico. Now, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson got a lot of attention for his testimony. His use of his question time. What kind of things did he have to say that got people's attention?
Yeah, I mean, even the senators there, bipartisan senators, were sort of questioning him. He basically used his time to talk about that the who was behind the protest, and he used the words that there were fake Trump protesters. I mean, he basically was saying that the people involved in the protests at the Capitol were not supporters of Donald Trump. And I think it's been clear from everything we've heard so far that that is not the case. Those people that did storm the Capitol, and many have been arrested so far, were supporters of Donald Trump. And of course, the impeachment trial that was just had basically went into detail about how some of these people were following exactly what President Trump was saying. And so they decided to go to the Capitol. It was baffling to a lot of his colleagues, even some Republican members. And you're right, he got a ton of attention for this, basically people complaining that he was using his time to espouse conspiracy theories.
Let's bring on a caller on this at 800-642-1234. Jay is with us in Two Rivers. Jay, hello.
Good afternoon. I'm really bad at guessing political outcomes. I didn't get the presidential elections since the year 2000, although I pay a lot of attention to NPR and other news feeds, and I just never seem to outguess the voters. But I am going to offer a guess that Ron Johnson is going to run again, because I can't see any other reason why he's trying to out-Trump Trump. His statements recently are just so outlandish, and I just don't know what else to make of it.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. There's a lot of question here in Wisconsin, Anita, whether Senator Johnson is going to run for a third term. But Jay says he appears to be positioning himself in a very pro-Trump lane, even among his fellow Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we're seeing right now with the Republican Party. Half of the party seems to be, you know, trying to turn the page from Donald Trump, and the other half, including Senator Johnson and Senator Cruz from Texas and Senator Hawley from Missouri, are trying to really be close to him and saying that he still did win the election and obviously talking about the protests. So there is a split in the party on what that way forward is. And it would make sense that some of them want to stick close to Donald Trump. He's still the leader at this point of the party, and maybe use his supporters to try to get reelected.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Kevin now in northern Wisconsin. Kevin, hello.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to say, yeah, another on Ron Johnson. The Democrats, if he does run next year, they have to work really hard. He's got to go. I mean, he's way out there. I mean, wow, where do you even start with the guy? You know, and it's incredible that he still has so much support in the state, but the state also supported Joe McCarthy. So there you go.
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. At the national level, Anita, can you talk about the calculations Republicans, not just Ron Johnson, are making as they, you know, look at reelection, risks of primary attacks in effect by Trump supporters if they don't go along those lines?
Yeah, President Trump has made it clear that once the impeachment trial ended, that he was going to be more vocal. If you'll remember when he left Washington on January 20th, he'd been pretty quiet for the last month or so. And now we expect him to really start speaking out and talking about Republicans and talking about the Republicans that are not supportive of him. And I think there's still some fear in the Republican Party that they just don't want to go against Donald Trump and they don't want to face that. Now, of course, Donald Trump doesn't have his Twitter feed like he used to. But, you know, he can still talk publicly, and we're going to see him have his first his first speech just in the next few days. So I think there's some concern about that. But look, they're also Republicans across the country are also looking at the fact that Donald Trump got 70 million plus votes on Election Day. And now some of those people would have voted for any Republican candidate because they are just Republicans. But some of them really do support Donald Trump, and they still do. And so there's a fear that if you're not supportive of Donald Trump, you won't get some of those votes. And so there is some calculus. There's some thinking that, you know, you could be, you know, you want the support of Donald Trump's supporters.
I want to give a listen before we move on to those hearings. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat, talking at the conclusion of the proceedings. Here's a listen.
There is clear agreement that this was a planned insurrection. So, and I think most members here are very firmly agree with that. And I think it's important for the public to know that this was planned. We now know this was a planned insurrection. It involved white supremacists. It involved extremist groups. And it certainly could have been so much worse except for the bravery of the officers.
And Anita, before we move on from the issue, what do we know about attempts to get a commission in place to investigate more fully?
Yeah, the Democrats are really pushing towards this, and the White House hasn't said they're opposed. But we are hearing some concerns by Republican members about what the makeup would be. So I think there is a thought that this is going to happen, sort of like they had a commission after the September 11th attacks, that kind of thing. And they're sort of working through how that would work, who would be on that commission, and what exactly they would do.
We're talking to Anita Kumar from Politico. It's the Week in Washington. We're talking about several top stories in national politics. Coming up, a look at President Biden's cabinet nominations, where they stand. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've seen of the cabinet nominations from the new White House? How do you think they've been treated? If you've been following the confirmation hearings, what questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico. It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Anita, let's get into cabinet appointments now, some going swimmingly, some in jeopardy. What kind of Senate confirmations are you paying the closest attention to?
Well, I think the biggest one right now, of course, is the one that's in jeopardy, and that is Neera Tanden, who was nominated to be the head of the budget office. So it's a cabinet level position, not one of those cabinet secretaries people might hear about. She lost the support of one Democrat that we know of. And as you know, the Senate is split 50-50. She would need to pick up support from a Republican to win that confirmation. What happened today is that the Senate, two Senate committees that are looking at her nomination, the Homeland Security and Budget Committees, sent out notices today saying that they're going to postpone their vote and that they're trying to get some more support for her before they do that vote. It does look like her nomination is in peril.
What have been the objections to her as the OMB director?
Well, it depends on who you ask. I'll tell you that the senators are saying it's because she has been extremely partisan in the past. She is on Twitter or has been on Twitter a lot. She's also been on television quite a lot, where she's basically been criticizing Republicans. And they're saying, how can, you know, President Biden say he wants to work with Republicans when he has nominated someone who has been extremely critical of Republican senators? Senators, she's now asking basically to vote for her. So that's the reason that they're giving. I'll say that, you know, different groups, women's groups and others have said, look, it's because she's a woman. It's a double standard. You have some people saying it's because of her background. She's Asian American, actually Indian American. Both of her parents are from India, though she was born here. So they're saying, look, people of color and women have a harder time getting their nomination through than others.
And could you talk about some of the other cases where people of color up for Senate confirmation are facing a rockier road than some others?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting because a lot of the ones that got delayed, not all of them, but some of them were people of color. So we saw the Homeland Security Secretary, who did get through and was confirmed. There was some delay. We've seen the Interior Secretary also have a delay. You know, all of them look pretty much like they're going through. We saw a hearing this week for the Attorney General, who also was delayed, but is not a person of color, Merrick Garland. And that looks like it's going to go through just fine. I think the only other one that we're really looking at is the Interior Secretary. She's actually Native American, and her nomination or her confirmation would be historic, and there are a lot of the same people supporting her that are supporting Neera Tanden. We haven't gotten close to that enough to know what that vote is going to look like. We do know that Joe Manchin, who is the Democrat from West Virginia who opposed Neera Tanden or is opposing her, has said he is going to vote for her. So hers looks like it's a slightly easier, and really in Washington, all eyes are on the Neera Tanden nomination.
I've seen some people jokingly refer to Senate Majority Leader Joe Manchin, who is not, of course, the actual Senate Majority Leader, but as a likely swing vote on confirmations and who knows what else, may have a lot of sway over what gets through this 50-50 Senate, right?
It's totally true. I mean, it's really remarkable. The moderates, particularly him, are really key right now. I mean, you kind of know where the Republicans are going to be generally. You kind of know where the Democrats, there are very few moderates, both Republicans and Democrats, right there in the middle, that are really going to decide both nominations, but they're also going to decide policies and legislation as it goes forward. Now, it is 50-50. Of course, the vice president, Kamala Harris, is a Democrat, so she can break that tie, but just one vote either way can really make the difference.
Talking to Anita Kumar from Politico, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Well, you mentioned policy items before Congress. Here's this COVID relief bill from the president. Doesn't look like it's going to hit that 60-vote threshold in the Senate, but they don't need it because they're using reconciliation. Where is that right now?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, President Biden had talked, you know, before he was sworn in about trying to get Republican support. He feels that it's very important. It's something that he, you know, tried to do when he was in the Senate all those years ago. But what he's finding is just opposition to this bill by Republicans. And so they've decided to use this budget maneuver that you mentioned, reconciliation, which basically means they can move forward with a simple majority instead of 60 in the Senate. So they are moving forward with that. They are basically saying, the White House is saying, and Democrats are saying that they want to move forward. They hope that Republicans will be on their side, but if not, they're going to move ahead because they feel like this money is needed. And of course, this package is huge. It's $1.9 trillion, almost $2 trillion, and it's everything. It's money for testing and the vaccine to get out, but it's also direct payments to Americans and money for schools. So they're very eager for all of that to get through. Now, we don't know that every single thing could to get through. There's a couple things that we're just not positive will make it. The president's talked about he wants to increase the minimum wage, and that may not make it. But most of the pieces probably could get through without this Republican support.
And on the Republican side, a lot of polling at this point shows a lot of public support, majority at least public support for this package. Republicans hoping to chip away at that, and not likely, it looks like, many of them to break ranks and vote for this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, you know, generally in Washington, you see the closer to the election, they might be willing to vote for something like this. But there are Republicans who are just, you know, even though there is American support for this, they are saying that they're not going to. Now, the Republicans have said, some of them, that they are supportive of a bill. They just think this is entirely too big. There are also disagreements on what they should spend money on. So, for example, one of the sticking points for months, even before this new Congress, even last year, was that Democrats really want money to go to state and local governments. Remember, state and local governments get their money from people eating out and shopping and taxes, and obviously people haven't been doing that. So they want to get that money to them, and Republicans don't support that. So it's not just the price tag, it's what the money is going to and the price tag. And there are Republicans who have said they want a smaller one, maybe a third of the size. And Democrats are just saying no. The White House is saying absolutely not. That's too small.
I want to spend our last couple of minutes, Anita, on something you wrote about lately. President Biden weighing some options on gun safety. What kind of measures is he looking at?
Well, this is a tough one. It's been a tough one for years now because it's hard to get anything through the Senate, particularly now because it's so split. The president is looking at executive orders that he can do. He's also looking at backing legislation. One of the things that we heard he's likely to do is ask for a rule from his administration to regulate things that are called ghost guns, which are something that has become popular in recent years. They're basically makeshift, homemade almost, guns that you can buy online or in a store where you make them at your home. They aren't regulated as firearms, and he would like those to be regulated. But they're also looking at a variety of other things, including a significant amount of money for community-based groups and communities of color to sort of try to prevent gun violence, not just mass shootings, but everyday gun violence that we hear about. It's still quite far away from a proposal, though, and that's making some people very frustrated. They thought that he would come into office with a plan on how to curb gun violence, and we're just not there yet.
And the Biden administration in a position, it's a tough issue to get things done on guns one way or the other, but also a COVID package, cabinet appointments, and more. Is there just so much stuff that is going to crowd out that part of his agenda?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they will get to it, and they very much are supportive, but you're exactly right. They are concentrating on this COVID relief package. It's their number one priority, and they're not going to do anything else legislatively, try to push through anything else until they get that done. Another point, though, is that they don't even have a confirmed attorney general yet. They will very soon here, but they also don't have a director of the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency. So they need to get a lot of these people in place before they can come up with a plan.
Anita, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That's Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico. We talked to her about several top Washington political stories, including a Senate hearing investigating the security breach at the Capitol on January 6th and confirmation hearings for President Biden's cabinet nominees.